Thank you. I know we have visitors today. Let me tell you, they really are therapists. And so they formed a band. But if you've been looking for a therapist, you might get their card while they're here. So today, I'm going to talk about myself. Well, and for our visitors, I want you to know that I normally come in here with a stack of notes and books to read from and a talk that is well-researched and well-rehearsed. And today, I'm winging it. So, let me tell you how this came about. In August, I went to speak at Unity of Dallas, and I was there at the same time as Ed Townley. He is a minister from Connecticut who has spoken here. Some of you remember him. He and I worked together when we were at Unity of Dallas. And so one of the things we used to love to do was pull up a couple of chairs and just have a conversation and let the congregation eavesdrop because we thought we were fascinating. So that's what we wanted to do again in August, and I got an email from Unity of Dallas the week ahead of time saying, "Did you really mean you want chairs on the platform?" Yes. So we pulled up our two chairs, and we talked about how our spiritual beliefs have changed since we were at Unity of Dallas 7 or 8 years ago, if they've changed and how they've changed. Actually, in the first service, we talked about what we've learned about ministry since then. And the one thing we kept trying to impress on them is that size doesn't matter. Dallas was a big church when we were there. It's smaller now. And he and I are both in smaller churches now. And it's fine. It really doesn't matter. And we tried to get them to just let the church be whatever size it organically is. And then at the second service, we talked about our personal spiritual beliefs and how they might have changed. And so I was telling this to one of our book study groups a few weeks ago, and they said, "Well, we'd like to hear that." So I'm going to talk about that, my part of that, today. And I just have one page of notes here in case I go completely blank. But there are three things I want to tell you about. The first change, because all these changes have happened while I've been here. You remember I came in April of 2009 as a temporary minister, and here I still am. It was about this time of that year that we decided I should just stay. When I got here, I was really focused on the third principle. In Unity, we base our teachings on ancient spiritual laws, and they boil down to 5 bullet points: that God is all there is, and therefore we must be divine. We are a part of that one mind. The third one is our thoughts have the power to create. Fourth is that prayer and meditation keep us connected with the divine. And then 5 is we must live the truth we know. It's not enough just to talk about this stuff. We put principle into practice. So for years, I was really almost obsessed with the third principle. Your thoughts have the power to create. We are the creators of our own experience. And actually, today, I believe that even more. I just try to explain it less. Because I think we as a human species have just a glimmer of awareness about how that might work. But we've seen it happen often enough that we know our thoughts manifest in our lives. But since I've been here, I stepped back to the second principle. I think most people work their way backwards through the principles. They start with lots of action, and then they realize prayer kind of helps smooth things out. And then they realize their thoughts are actually creating their experience. That's by me. And then the second one is through me. I am the divine in expression. I'm showing up as the divine on the earth. In Unity, we call it Christ consciousness. So I moved into the second principle, and you've heard me talk about that a lot, about, okay, we're divine. What does that mean for our daily lives? And it's divine in the sense that a drop of ocean is made up of all the elements of the ocean. It's not the whole ocean. So we are like drops of God. with elements of the divine in us. What else could we be if God is all there is? But I keep asking the question, okay, I'm divine. How does that get me through the week? What do I do differently if I'm trying to live from Christ consciousness? And so you've heard me talk about that. I did a whole series called Unapologetic Divinity about how our divine consciousness might show up at work, at home, with friends, that kind of thing. And then more recently, I've stepped back into principle one, which is God is all there is, and God is absolute good, which feels really good on the surface and then immediately raises questions. Then what about evil? What about all the bad things that happen in the world? How can the people who annoy us so much or even attack us also be a part of God? You know, I just love to wrestle with questions. I don't have to find an answer. If I found an answer, I'd give one more talk and be done, I guess. So I just keep going through the questions. In the book I wrote in 2008, The Five Principles, I speculated on all the reasons that there might be evil. Human free will is one of them. Our labels is another. We label things good and bad, and we've all initially labeled some things bad that turned out to be for our highest good. And so if I'm in principle one, I keep wrestling with how can this be good? At least in the absolute realm, in the great cosmic scheme of things, how can this be good? How can it be for my good? So more on that in a minute. The second change that's come about since I've been here is that I started talking to angels. You all have made me a lot more woo-woo than I was when I got here. And that's okay. Angels, you know, I think of them as angels. What it really means is that I feel a sense of communication with something larger, greater, and wiser than I am. So my higher self, it could be whatever you call it, spirit guides, Jesus, Buddha, whatever works for you. I have learned from you all that there's still an allergy to Jesus and the Bible here for some of you. If the Buddha said it, it's brilliant and profound. If Jesus said it, ugh. And you know they said nearly all the same things in almost the same words. There are books that compare them side by side. So anyway, I've started this dialogue with angels for the last few years. I do it through writing. Because I can type so fast, I can close my eyes and just ask them questions and they answer and I can get it all down. My friend Janet Connor calls that deep soul writing. And she calls it the voice. She doesn't call it angels, but she calls it the voice. You're asking the voice to answer these questions for you. And it was hard for me to give myself permission to do that. Because once I got into Unity, I had it so drummed into me that God is not an entity. God is not a supreme being out there watching us and judging us, that there's no separation between us and God. And so talking to angels, I worried about separation. And I asked them about that, and they said, it's all one. Back to principle one. It's all one. It's really okay. You're kind of talking to yourself and you're kind of talking to us and there's more than you'll ever understand, so just let it go. And so that's what I've done. And you've heard me talk about the three faces of God. That is probably the most significant learning I've had since seminary. And in some ways, it's a flash of the obvious. The three faces of God comes from Ken Wilber, who is an American, more a philosopher than a theologian, lives in Boulder. Most of what he writes is really cerebral, and I don't understand it. But I got the three faces of God. And what he says is, when you look at the world's religions, God shows up, God is conceptualized in three basic ways. God as all there is, the transcendent God that we have in Unity. God within, the divine that we are, which we have in unity, and God in relationship, which I had an allergy to for so long. It's very big in Christianity that God is separate from you and you're talking to God or to Jesus. And Wilbur says most religions pick one or two of those ideas about God and judge the others, reject the others. And ideally, we would be working with all three. They would be like tools in the box that we can pull out and use depending on what works for us at the time. And that kind of gave me permission to be in relationship with something. So I'm calling it angels, but you can call it whatever you want. You may remember if you were here, I tried for a long time to talk you all out of having a relationship with God, and you just didn't buy it. What I learned from you is that people really want a sense of something that is greater and wiser than they are, that they can communicate with. And after I'd been talking to angels for a couple of years, I realized I do too. So call it what you will, but it is that I-thou relationship that the theologian Martin Buber talked about, the second face of God, a relationship. First is the divine within, second is relationship, and third is the transcendent God that is all that is. The third thing that's been going on since I've been here, let me remember what it is. Oh, yeah. This is a little bit specific to Ed Townley. Ed Townley, my minister friend, is obsessed with the hero's journey. And when we were in Dallas, he talked about life in terms of the hero's journey, and he taught The Wizard of Oz and Harry Potter and Star Wars. Everything I learned about The Wizard of Oz, I learned from Ed. So, you know, in the hero's journey, someone is leading kind of a humdrum life and feeling this, what we would call divine restlessness. And they're called to something greater, and they set off, step out in faith on this great adventure. And they recruit allies to their side, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow. And they encounter obstacles and enemies, the Wicked Witch of the West. And finally, they break through all of that, and they return home with what we would call expanded consciousness, with some kind of treasure or learning. That's the hero's journey. And I used to quibble with Ed about that because I was so into the third principle, you're the creator of your experience. And I said, if you say that when you go out there, you're going to encounter obstacles and enemies, then you will. You're creating them, you're setting yourself up for them. And he would say, no, that's just the human experience. That's what we came for, is to learn how to work through those obstacles as humans. He said on the other side, it was presumably easy, pure positive energy. There are no obstacles. And we were up there saying, essentially, I'm going to go down there and show them how it's done. I'm going to go down there and put all of this divine love into practice on that dense physical planet. And that's what we're here for. And rather than trying to transcend the human experience, we're here to plow through it and feel it and experience it. Well, it turns out that's the book I just wrote, Hell in the Hallway, Light at the Door. And we didn't talk about this when I was in Dallas with Ed, and I hope he does not hear this recording. Because Ed was right. I have come around, and I was well into writing this book when I realized I was saying, plow through the human experience. This is what we came for. Feel the feelings that come up. You know, let it be what it is. Don't try to transcend it with positive thoughts. And that's the hell in the hallway, that when one door has closed, another one will open, but it can be hell in the hallway. And so the book is about that spiritual path through change and transition. And over in the book, I caught myself saying, it's happening for you, not to you. This really is for your highest good. Everything is God, principle one. And so whatever is going on in your life is somehow part of the great cosmic scheme of things that is designed for your good. You participate in that with the third principle as a co-creator with God. Your thoughts, your prayers create your experience. You have divine power within you. I keep going back to the five principles. But it's all God. And so whatever you are experiencing, call it a hallway, is part of the absolute good, the stream of well-being in which we live. So that's kind of where I am today with those three things. God is all there is, and therefore anyone you communicate with, angels or whatever, is a part of that infinite mind. And we are on a hero's journey. Jesus is another example. He practiced principle really well, but even his life was not without enemies and without conflict. So that must be what we're here for. That's kind of where I am today. And I think I promised in the blurb for this talk that I would let you ask questions. So if you want to, I'm here. And there's one already. Yes, ma'am.
Have you ever met an angel?
I couldn't claim that. I know people who see them. I know people who hear them. I heard recently about one of the authors who sees angels was watching a choir sing and saw the angels dancing along with the music. I think that would be kind of fun, but I think they also know I'd be terrified if I saw something like that. So when I feel like I'm in dialogue with them, it's not even a voice that I hear, it's more like just thoughts. And sometimes I think, this is just me, this is just my imagination. And they're saying, really, it doesn't matter. You know, wherever the message comes from, it's all one. They keep harping on that. The other thing they keep saying is, just decide. Yes, you're the creator of your experience, but you have to decide what it is you want to create. Lee. Blah, 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 blah. Yep.
And I think that was the only thing that you, I'm not going to say you left out, but that's the one thing that I would want to add to what we've been talking about, is that God is all there is, God is love. I guess we're saying God's all good, but love is really the word put in there.
Okay, and I'm repeating for those who will be listening online and in England and others. Kate, who lives somewhere in the boonies outside of Fort Worth, we have lots of online fans, you know. Anyway, what Lee said was, I keep saying it's all good, and he's saying it's all love, which is a more powerful word probably to use. So all you need is love. Jeff, I saw your hand up.
Can you describe your meditational practice on a daily practice that you do, or if you do it daily, and how you do it, what your experience is?
Oh, gosh, I was afraid someone would ask that. I'm not good at the sitting still and breathing. I'm working on it. It really is in that dialogue with the divine that I'm sort of zoned out. And then anytime I'm writing, when I'm working on talks, when I'm working on books, it's in that sort of downloading zone, if that makes sense. But it's not a real formal practice. I feel really guilty saying that to you. Former Sufi that he is. Yeah. Yes.
Do you feel there's
Michael.
A divine plan?
Not a divine plan that's imposed on us. My personal belief is that we made some soul agreements before we came in. At least for the things we wanted to learn, and maybe for the form in which they would come to us. So I think sometimes we might agree to a lifetime where we're going to learn about loss. A lifetime where we're going to learn about rejection or about poverty. I mean, if you have unlimited lifetimes throughout eternity, it becomes like going to a movie. Oh, let's go see a horror flick this time. Don't you think? And I think when we're on the other side in pure positive energy, we're saying, oh yeah, I'll handle it this time. This time I'll remember, you know, that I'm really divine and it's all in order. So I think there may be some points of destiny along the way. I also think we can change our minds as we go. And I'm not sure exactly how that happens. So, Corrine and then Pennell.
Well, when I'm in the hallway and it's not feeling so good,
yes.
I guess I need to remember God's in the hallway too.
Yes, God's in the hallway too. Yeah. Pennell, welcome back. Yeah.
Why would we leave that?
Good question. So, I'm totally making this up. I think we decided to leave bliss because there were certain things we could only learn here. And if our souls are continuing to grow and expand, our overall consciousness is expanding, then we would choose different experiences sort of to test ourselves. I think of it like going on a vacation, signing up to go on vacation. You know when you go that it might rain the whole time you're there, but you take the chance. You know that you might get lost on the highway, but you know that ultimately it'll be okay. And I think we come into our lifetimes knowing that ultimately it'll be okay. Does that make sense? Some vacations are more adventurous than others. Some you just look at the scenery. Some you go on zip lines and scuba diving. Cindy.
I'm hearing you talk about the angels, and I'm wondering if all that we need, we manifest that, and it's something that's already there waiting for us.
Mm-hmm.
So then, therefore, the answers are already there. What if it's just another form of our subconscious? Actually giving us the answers because it's already there rather than necessarily thinking that it's an angel, but maybe that angel really is just our subconscious that we've finally gotten in touch with.
Right.
Giving us the light bulb moments.
Right.
And there's just more of them when we're in tune. And that's my
So an angel is our subconscious giving us light bulb moments. Right, because it's already here, it's already true. Yeah, we're the ones who open up. It's not that they're finally deigning to talk to us. They've probably been so frustrated.
And that's why you say, it doesn't matter, we're all one.
Right.
And I'm hearing, okay, we're all one, subconsciously, external conscious,
right.
To me, that's what I'm hearing.
Charles Fillmore, here's a teachable moment. Charles Fillmore would call it the superconscious. That the divine ideas, the expanded consciousness, comes from what he called our superconscious. The subconscious is where we've stored a lot of human stuff that we're not consciously aware of. And sometimes the super goes around to the sub without our ever knowing it. So however it works. It's just a constant process of opening up to more. Being willing to listen and maybe accept what we hear. And I think we get to wrestle with it as long as we want to. Yes?
Why does pure evil exist?
Unity's founders would say it doesn't. They would say there is no force of evil doing battle with God. That what we're calling evil is free will run amok. It is the immaturity of the human race. And I would say it's also our labels. And what we label evil might turn out to be a necessary part of the great cosmic scheme of things. I think in our lifetimes we have such a brief glimpse of what's going on. We don't have the big picture. So I'm not trying to say evil is good or that evil doesn't exist, but in the absolute realm, it doesn't. That didn't help, did it? Okay. There are horrible human beings. Yeah. But I don't, and this is what makes principle one so hard. If it's all God, how do we explain the horrible human beings or the terrible illnesses? Right. Judith.
Because since the day you got here, you have revealed yourself in little blurbs in some of your talks.
Mm-hmm.
I have grown hugely as a spiritual person because of you.
she, okay, for the online people, she asked if I'm aware of how much this church is growing with me. From my perspective, I am always running on my tiptoes to keep up with you. So, whatever. But it seems like a good match, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'm really comfortable here and feel like what I talk about is what you're interested in and you get me.
And that's
great.
You, that's what I mean. Are you aware of that?
Well, thank you. That's, I'm sure that's an opinion. So we've used up our time. Let me just end this way. The point of doing this was just to say, if you're on a spiritual path, you're moving and the scenery will change. And so if you feel your beliefs changing or if you start to entertain things that you never thought you would, that's all part of the path. And ministers do it. If we just came to a point where we believe one thing and never moved from there, we would run out of talks really fast. So it's because of our own growth that we keep coming back and saying, well, what about this? Well, what about that? And I assume it's the same for you. But just in case you need permission to change your beliefs as you go, you have my permission because I think that's how it works. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. In meditation, we breathe and relax and become still. So that we can become aware again of our own divinity and our connection with the one presence and power in our lives. Whatever we call it, God, angels, Jesus, our own higher self, our sub or super conscious, we are grateful for the light that comes to us, that glows in us. Grateful for new awarenesses, new ideas, and especially grateful for a spiritual community to share them with. So take a moment and feel that place deep within you that is always at peace and always feeling love. That is the divine in you. It's here that we can ask questions and receive answers. It's here that we can remember, no matter what we observe in the outer world, there is divine love and well-being at work on this planet. It's in this place of oneness that we know who we truly are. And we say, thank you, God. Amen.